Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
This is so fun. It's Robin and I in studio with Mary Pero, and Robin met Mary through me, but yes. I met her through another friend. Actually, I re-met you, right?
Yes, that's correct.
I re-met you because you said, we've met before. When I'm like, you look so familiar. And you're like,
you all are like
we've met before.
Same place, yeah. Same yes. time, just yeah. never yes. met.
Right. Well, we actually did, but I tend to meet a lot of people,
right.
and I tend to be chasing either children or grandchildren or something, and I'm always in a hurry, so I'm not always aware of my environment. So it was so good to re-meet you, and then we did a writer's workshop,
yes.
which is something that both Robin and Mary do regularly, mm-hmm. and do these writer's conferences. And so we'll have to make an announcement or put it on one of our pages, that information for those aspiring writers out there who listen to Women Worth Knowing, and you're listening because you are a writer probably, and you love these stories.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you're inspired to write the story of somebody you know or your own story. So I would highly recommend it after being in that workshop with them and not writing one word since, but being so inspired to do it. I love that. But Mary, as we get into this episode two, we left you in Poland,
mm-hmm.
a little bit lonely, but the Lord just meeting you even in your loneliness. You know, I find loneliness so weird, to be almost romantic at
yes,
times.
Yes, yes,
because
me too.
It keeps my dependency on the Lord. And
it's true.
I actually have these moments of loneliness where it just seems like the Lord draws so near. And I know that just, you know, serving, and I know
yeah,
Robin knows that.
Yeah.
And there's almost a beauty in it that you wouldn't trade. And so how long were you in Poland?
I think we figured out over the course of like 3.5 or 4 years,
oh,
because
like, yeah.
I was 30 when I moved to the west coast of Ireland.
Mm. And we've got to get into that.
Yeah. So I was in Poland for a good bit of time. I was serving there for a long time. While I was there, the plan was that I was going to be kind of training or discipling other worship leaders, and perhaps, you know, there's so many missionaries in Europe, these small little church plants that didn't have musicians, didn't have worship
yeah.
leaders. And so the idea was kind of like, maybe you would have this opportunity to go bless some other people. And that just, you know, how it often works. That didn't end up happening. And the church that I was with, I ended up having to lead worship full time with the Kules. So that was a quick primer in let's start speaking Polish as fluently as we can, because as a worship leader, you're often expected to pray before you lead worship. So I don't know how well I did that, but I did pick up the language pretty quickly at that point and was leading worship in Polish for a number of years.
So that's amazing.
It wasn't what I expected, but they were definitely, they were my lessons of faith that, you know, you look back and you can see that
that's huge. It's
yeah.
huge. I know in those churches, you know, having served with missionaries, mm-hmm. that the two greatest needs are, one, a worship leader, and two, Sunday school help.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Church, help with children.
Yes.
Those are the two greatest needs.
Yeah. So many couples that we met or that I met over the years through the Kules and, you know, in our brief travels around Poland or to the castle, that was the situation. You know, the husband's doing his best to kind of make some contacts and also teach.
Yes.
And to do that in a foreign land, you know, mm-hmm. where just figuring out life takes up 9/10 of the time. Mm-hmm. And then the wife, who's usually has children and is trying to figure out how to be parent, you know, mother in a foreign country.
Yeah.
And also on Sundays, she's usually the one leading. It's not always the case, but I know it's such a blessing
yeah.
to have and to have the fellowship and the support. I remember one of the first years that we had, it was probably 4th of July, I don't even remember, that it was like an American holiday, something that wouldn't have been celebrated in Poland. And we just had a little barbecue. But I remember feeling emotional in a way that I hadn't quite before, that just, you know, there's things that connect us. And of course, our citizenship in heaven would be the primary one. We're all sons and daughters of the King. But, you know, it's that kind of speaks to the loneliness, too. And when you're just when culturally
yes.
everything is so different, the language is different, how we communicate is different. what our priorities or values might be and different, you know, so, yeah, it can be a lonely time to be a mm-hmm. missionary, even when you're surrounded by lovely, wonderful people. You know, for a missionary wife, it can be a lonely time.
So lonely.
Right?
Now, Let me just jump in on one thought here. It's so important for those who may have thought, well, I think the Lord's calling me to missions, but I really can't do anything. I play guitar, lead worship, but that's not a missionary, is it? Or, you know, there's so much of a thought that, okay, I have to be a Bible teacher. I have to go and preach. But that Cheryl just brought that up is such a need, and how you were able to step into that. And, oh, look, there's a great need for this.
Yes.
I just feel like there are some who might think, I'd love to go do some sort of mission work, but all I do is sing.
Yeah, I would say, start praying.
Yes,
or start emailing a missionary, right?
All the Maranatha songs with 10 chords.
That's all you need. Email the missionary, start praying for them, start seeing where the Lord's, like how he's bringing, leading friendships or opening doors. That really was my journey. And a lot of my, you know, I'm using air quotes, but mission work was, you know, hey, Kurt and Kendall, can I babysit your kids? Hey, Kurt and Kendall,
amazing.
Can I come over and hang out with you guys? You know, I mean, just having an extra person, they were a gift to me, and I hope I was a gift to them, too. It's such a need.
Yeah, I'm keeping myself from commenting because I want to hear your story so much, because I could add so many of my own stories, and this is not my day. But I wanted to talk to you. How did you get from Poland to Ireland?
Well,
because I got to get you to today pretty soon.
Yes.
I mean, I'm here to like
move the train along.
Yes.
So when I was in Poland, there was a little bit of uncertainty as to what the future of the church was going to be. A lot of things had transpired. And around that time, maybe a little bit earlier, Jeff and Teresa Geip had made contact with a Christian surfer in Ireland, John McCarthy. I believe John had come to one of the conferences here in Costa Mesa.
And Drew Bryan.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he was praying about a church being started on the west coast of Ireland where he lived. And so Jeff went on a short-term mission trip and took a group of people. And they said, hey, you know, it's a short flight from Poland. We'd love to see you. And I said, great. I went. While I was there, I really felt like it was an open door. So I went back to Poland. And as I said, you know, things were changing in Poland. And I felt like it was the Lord was leading me, and Ireland was very open. They had invited me to come. So let's start with that. I felt the Lord leading me, but I had also been invited. There was a group of not just John, but there was a few other Irish folk out there that were like, we're going to start a church, but we would love for you to come and kind of support through worship.
Yes.
And so I did. I was part of the church plant that was going on it started in Lahinch and in Ennis and that kind of area. So, it was a really special time. I was only there for about a little less than a year. Mm-hmm. While I was there, my dad got sick with pancreatic cancer.
Mm.
And I came home thinking that I would just be home for a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved Ireland so much. It was like a young crowd, people my age, single.
Yep.
That was kind of my first time having that experience.
Yep.
And I was like, I will. And when the sun comes out in Ireland, it is magic.
It is.
I lived
glorious.
Just up the street from the Cliffs of Moher. Like, it was stunning. I was like, I will live here forever. The Mary flag has gone in. I'm coming back. That just wasn't the Lord's plan. So I came back and I was here for quite a while. Still trying to get back. The door's closing. And during that time, I met my now husband, Mark Perrow. And we had a very kind of a whirlwind courtship.
Tell us about it. Come on. I love these stories.
I love stories, yes.
So we had met on one of my previous furloughs. And so I knew him. We had mutual friends. But I really didn't think much of it. I found out later that he did.
I love that.
And I came back a year later. Now, before I'd come back, some friends of mine had said, I had a dream about you. And in my dream, I met your husband. And now, this particular friend, I was not entirely sure if I'd known her to be prophetic. So I was like, okay, you know, hit me with it. So she described this little scene. And I thought, I'm not sure. You know, I was leading worship and we were in our church in Poland and he'd come. He was wearing a leather jacket and she said, oh, he's good looking. He has like sandy blonde hair, you know, and I just, oh, come on. This is no. Anyways, and she said he came up to you after worship and he was talking to you. And I was like, why is he here? OK, so fast forward. I was home on furlough, on a lengthy furlough because of my dad. And, you know, when you're looking at, my dad had terminal cancer. He lived for 2 years, which was actually quite a long time.
Pancreatic,
we tried, absolutely.
Cancer, yes.
So we had tried to do the surgery. It didn't work. He lived for quite a long time. And when you're going through something like that and you know, my dad is going to die, and you're trying to prepare yourself and also you cannot prepare yourself. I feel like those are the times like you need a good friend, you know, who and I had a lot of great friends, but I noticed at church a lot of people would be like, how's your dad? We're praying for him, which I so appreciated. And I know it was genuine, but it felt lonely still. You know, I was being seen and loved by my friends, but it still felt so lonely. And I remember as I was befriending my husband, you know, after Bible study one night, he'd just come sit and be like, how's your family doing? And he was such a good listener. And I really felt like I can talk to this person. And we became friends until I realized one day, I think this guy's getting the wrong idea. So I gave him the cold shoulder for a while.
Oh, man.
And then I know. And then
did Christy ever do that in any of the books to Todd? I just need to know.
Gave him the cold shoulder. And then I kind of thought, well, you know what? I mean, I'm in my early 30s. Like, I am mature enough to have a relationship with someone who likes me and it can still be friendship. And so I decided to be friends with him again. And then I kind of saw that he was getting the wrong idea again. But by this time, I was like, I really like talking to this guy. So we didn't know each other very well. And one day he asked me out and I remember, he asked for a number. I remember driving home being like, I gave it to him like, and like immediately on the phone with my mom, what did I just do? And I told my mom and Teresa Geip, a good friend of mine. I said, you know, if this man asked me out to dinner, I'm going to say no. I can't handle it. I'd been single for so long. I can't do the dress up, like try to kind of, I just can't. And so I just, you know, I'd prepared myself. I'm going to have to say no to this guy. And he invited me instead to a vintage wood boat show in Lake Arrowhead. And I was like, absolutely.
There you go.
We spent the entire day together. My mom thought it was crazy. You're not going to go to dinner with this man, but you spend the entire, we had the best time. And of course, as I shared, like we didn't know each other super well, but by the end of the day, he was like, let me pray for our relationship. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know that we have one, buddy. But he just shared his entire life story with me and, you know, and I shared mine with him. And it was that kind of like, I see you and I know you. And you did that C.S. Lewis quote where he says, is it C.S. Lewis?
Me
where
too.
He said, me
yeah.
too. Me too.
That's one of our favorites.
It was that kind of meeting, you know.
I like by I the, was the only
Yeah.
One.
Yes. By the end of the day, it was like, I mean, I hardly know you and yet I know everything about you. And I started a journal that night, which surprised me, just for the two of us. I'm so glad I have it. Mm. 5 days later, we were both like, I love you. You're the one. We're getting married. It just felt like the Holy Spirit had kind of arranged the marriage. We didn't know each other that well. So we dated.
I kind of love that because it's just when your heart is so tuned toward the Lord mm-hmm. and you resist anything else. And then when the Lord just kind of melts it, there it is.
Yeah.
Like, just step into what I've been trying to prepare.
But you know what, too? Also the friendship. Because mm-hmm. that was, with Brian, it was, I could talk to him like he was my best friend.
So natural.
And we still are best friends. Yes. I mean, even when I've been mad at him during the marriage, it's never lasted long because I need to tell somebody. And he's the only person I can tell.
I know.
So, you know, I have to. And he's had the same thing. Like, I can't be mad at Cheryl because I really want to talk to her and tell her this and run this by her. So it's like none of our fights have ever lasted.
Yeah, I say the same thing to Mark. I'm like, I really should be mad at you, but you are absolutely too cute for that.
Yeah. Aww.
So, sorry.
You two are very natural together.
Yeah. And we just celebrated our 15th wedding anniversary.
Excellent.
So when I married him, I got the added bonus blessing of two daughters mm-hmm. who have become very, very dear friends of mine. In addition to, I mean, truly daughters. I love them. So it's been good. It's been, you know, you're not going to have 15 years without having some hard ones in there. But it was good.
Now, Mary, I know that part of your testimony, too, is the foster.
Yeah.
And so can we talk about that a little bit? Because, you know, marriage, it's ministry.
Yeah.
I mean, ministry is, I tell people being a stepmom is a ministry. Mm-hmm. Because it's a talk about a delicate balance, mm-hmm. you know, of standing back enough to, well, you know, all of that. And those who are stepmothers know that. But then the moving into the foster care.
Yeah, we had not been married very long. So the girls were older. Our youngest was going off to college and her older sister was in her first few years. Mm-hmm. So we really started with a friendship. And I'm still touched to this day how welcoming they were to me and how open they were mm-hmm. to me. And we've developed a great friendship. But you're right. I mean, even being a parent of adult children, even if they're your biological children, you don't parent adult children the same way that you yeah. parent teenagers or little kids. So there was, you know, there's been a learning curve. But I love them dearly. I'm so thankful for them. Mark and I had been married for a few years. And at the time we had a house had two bedrooms. And we wanted to keep one open for our girls when they came to visit. But we started feeling like, well, what are we going to do? You know, how are we going to kind of move forward? Like, we just weren't really sure. And I had, at the time, I'd never really had this overwhelming desire, like, I need to have biological children of my own, mm-hmm. even though I loved kids. Mm-hmm. We always kind of thought, like, that would be an added bonus. But, and as I look back now, it probably wasn't possible for me to have children. And so I just think that was the Lord's, you know, mercy yeah. to me that yeah. it wasn't something that was a desperate desire. So we started thinking about foster kids. My mom and dad had informally fostered someone before I was born, but I'd heard some stories about this. And my husband, he had had some foster care things happen in his childhood when, you know, he lived, it would be called kinship care now, but he lived with his grandmother for a while mm-hmm. and another sibling mm-hmm. actually did live with a foster parent. So we'd had positive experiences and kind of like, maybe let's do that. I read an article in the newspaper one day. So we went and we were kind of like, we could do this. Like, just having kids in the house. I had a job that was like, we wanted older kids. I think that's something important about our story because
that is huge.
We didn't think we were going to be adopting. That was mm-hmm. never, we just thought we were going to be mm-hmm. fostering kids for, and hopefully reuniting them with their family. And I was working. So we thought, well, we'll have kids that are school age. That will help. That it, you know, it takes over your whole life, so it doesn't really matter whatever your plans are, you know. So we had a couple of girls come stay with us for a summer in the beginning, and oh gosh, how old were they? I want to say they were 5 and 7, and it was, you know, somebody threw us into the deep end, and at the end of the summer, they actually were reunited with their uncle. We were very glad about that. And then we had two teenage boys come stay with us just for a very short amount of time, kind of a respite care thing. And we took a few breaks in there and then we dove back in and we had three boys come stay with us at the time. They had just turned 5, 6, and 9.
Wow. And they were brothers.
Yes. And, they ended up staying with us for 6 years.
Wow.
So, that is one of the, is it Catherine Wolfe, I believe, I love her so much, who says it's the good, hard story. And that definitely was. We really thought that they might stay permanently. And there were a lot of obstacles and challenges that were making that become apparent that might not work the way that we had, you know, yet another story.
Yeah.
I feel like my life is like one story after the other of the Lord being like, no, you definitely feel called and then you get there and it kind of like blows up and you're like, wait, Lord, you know,
like Paul going to Philippi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you're thinking you're going to go meet a Macedonian who's going to go tell me the way. And you meet a woman
yeah.
who's down at a river and then you get thrown into prison. So
yeah.
there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember a friend of mine, Ildi in Hungary. Telling
oh, yes.
me,
I know Ildi.
She's such a lovely lady.
Yes.
I remember her telling me when she was like, you know, I want to meet someone who I can still smell the smoke on him. And I thought, what are you talking about?
Oh.
And she's talking about like, people who've been through the fire and have been burned, but they're still walking, they're still standing.
That's good.
Yeah, and I feel like I've had a number of those kind of experiences in my life that just by God's glory, you know, we've gotten through it. So the fun part about the story with the kids is when they left our home, which is not really what we wanted to happen, and it was devastating and And then in other ways, you know, I mean, like, we had been giving our whole life to children that we loved. And, you know, you're kind of like, oh, I have a new opportunity. What's the Lord doing now? Right. We actually thought that we might not see them or talk to them for a really long time. And in the last few years, we have been talking to them more and more and hearing from them more and more. And we can see the Lord doing things. I mean, we never stop praying for these kids. They've been kids of our heart. And never stop loving these kids, even from afar. And we've had a few things. The last time I saw them was about a year ago. And I just was sitting in a, you know, when you find yourself in the middle of a moment, I don't, is this a writer thing where you're like, I am in the middle of the moment and I am aware as if I'm, you know, everything going, I can see everything around me, but it's as if I'm not here, but I'm here. And just once again, like felt the Holy Spirit, like story's not over yet.
Mm.
And you thought this was the story we were telling, but that's not actually the story that I'm writing. And so that has been, there's been a lot of freedom in that to let go and say, you know, it was hurtful once again, like not being good enough for piano or things falling apart in Poland or things falling apart, you know, the kids having to leave. And that was hurtful, but the Lord has a good plan. And there's something, there's a story the Lord is telling that is good. It's hard. I don't get it right now, right, but it is good.
But speaking of stories, sometime in that time you started ghostwriting.
Yeah.
So yes. Was that why the kids were still in your house that you started doing this ghostwriting? And how did you discover that you had this ability to take someone else's story and make it clear?
Well, at the time that was my job at the time, I was working for pastor, motivational speaker, author, he had written a few books and he would speak all over the country, had an incredible message. I was just doing administrative work for him. And he figured out pretty quickly that I was really good at writing, I was really good at editing. And I started getting more and more jobs, you know, writing the newsletter and things like that. And over time, I began collaborating with him on his books and editing and working on books for him and with him. And some other pastor friends, because I'd had this network, came and were asking, like, could you do for me what you're doing for him? I was like, sure, I have no idea what I'm doing, but like, absolutely, I could see the story.
Yes.
So I started doing that. And then, you know, as the Lord leads, right? I was also praying. I knew I wanted to start my own business again. I thought I'd have more time, freedom to be with the kids. And I found a ghostwriting program at Cal State Long Beach. And I called her and I told her, you know, I was like Googling, like, what is developmental editing? Like, is that what I'm doing? And I read the description. I thought, I think I'm doing more writing than that, you know? So I had a phone call and the professor there was like, you're a ghostwriter. You just don't know what you're doing. So I went into a 2-year program there and then started helping people write their books. I mean, I as a ghostwriter, I write books for people. But, you know, I also coach people through their story. And I think that, you know, talking about the gift of worship that we talked about earlier, yeah. I think that that's the tool or the skill is writing. And I went to school to figure that out and organize it. But I think the gift is really, I just love hearing people's stories. I love talking to people. And as I'm talking to people, I can quite often see like, oh, I know what you're trying to say. So people will tell me their story and they'll be like, I want to write a book, but I don't know what it's about. And I will repeat back to them their story. And they're like, you get me, you know.
And this goes back to the professor in Fullerton who said you have this ability to communicate.
Yeah.
It's like you can see, put it together.
Connect the dots.
I know sometimes I'm talking to somebody and I can see it like it's a movie playing in my mind. And I know exactly where to start the story. I know exactly how to even market it. Like, I know it when I'm talking to others. And I tell, as part of, as a speaker, I'm always telling other people's stories because they relate to the scripture or to this moment. So I love it. So where you're at right now, we've got like 30 seconds. So where are you at right now? Where is Mary, besides being
She's
a wonderful co-host?
At her
yes.
I Full am, circle.
I yes. am. I'm a worship leader, one of many amazing worship leaders at my church. I am writing, I'm ghostwriting, I'm, you know, trying as much as I can to share my gift with others, whether that be through worship or storytelling. And I think just, you know, I'm kind of on the ride, seeing where the Lord's leading me now. We've kind of come back to a new place of, Is it Psalm 16 where David says, you know, the lines have fallen
yes.
for me
yes,
in
it
pleasant
is. Yes.
places?
I love it because I say that about my wrinkles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the lines have fallen for me in pleasant places.
Mary, I have enjoyed today so much. And
me
I love
too.
Hearing all those little things, you know, because I knew you were great, but I didn't know about all these other aspects that are so wonderful. So
and now our listeners know when they hear her on the
podcast. That's right. Yeah, this just isn't any Mary. This is Mary Perro.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Ah, loved it.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.